beginning with Monday.
Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, the 14th of February. I'm Jack, and my partner for the next hour is...
Karen.
Karen, okay. We're pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are today's headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. Crooks breakout has Bishop Garrigan on the edge of postseason glory. United Way raises $769,000 in 2019 campaign. Governor Kim Reynolds takes tax swap plan on the road. Bond could fund more job training at NIAC. Family's rough road may be ending. Huizentrout case part of a TV series. And in the weather today, it is nice and chilly. The temperature right now, I believe, is 19 below zero. And the five-day forecast is for sunny and becoming windier, a high of 15 for today. For tomorrow, rising temperatures, wind south-southwest at 15 to 25 miles per hour, and a high of 11. On Saturday, mostly cloudy, not as cold. Wind west, 8 to 16 miles per hour. A high of 32, low of 12. On Sunday, sun and clouds. Wind north, 6 to 12 miles per hour. High of 27, low of 21. Now, with the first story, here is...
Karen.
Karen.
Good morning, everyone. Bond could fund more job training at NIAC. College focusing on improving workforce training. If NIAC's $15 million bond referendum passes, the college will bring regional career education centers to North Iowa. The North Iowa Area Community College is focusing on improving its workforce and job training programs, dedicating about a third of the $15 million bond referendum to building on current programs and creating new regional educational centers. Residents in the college's 11-county region will be voting on the college's first bond referendum in its 100-year history in the March 3 election. The bond will be used for improvements and updating the college's programs, auditorium, and interior and exterior infrastructure. If passed, the bond would raise NIAC's property tax levy by 20.25 cents per $1,000 of taxable property value. The biggest program the bond will be used toward is the college's job training and workforce programs, improving upon and updating its current on-campus programs. Like its healthcare and advanced manufacturing programs, and building up to three regional educational centers for students throughout its region. North Iowa is in desperate need of workers in four main areas: healthcare, advanced manufacturing, construction, and information technology, according to NIAC President Steve Schultz. We could double the numbers coming out, and there'd be no problem, he said. They're guaranteed jobs when they finish this. To keep up with the increasing demand for graduates in these fields, NIAC needs to build these programs more and train its students properly on the most relevant up-to-date equipment. The new equipment could include a new human simulator, which would cost between $40,000 and $150,000, and new updated machines for the tool and die classes. NIAC Electronics Tech instructor Brian Mason said he has two mechanical system trainers set up and designed for two students to use at a time to teach a class of eight students. So there's a lot of people around one trainer, which makes for issues, so that the whole crux of the matter. Money coming from the tax increase will help us to increase the amount of lab stations that we can have. Then they get more out of lab time. Schultz said that if they can drive the guided pathways model, bringing students from high school to the Career Pathways Center to NIAC, they can expand the workforce as students come out the back end. These career pathway centers or regional education centers will provide high quality career, technical education within 30 miles of every high school and will need similar equipment to the on-campus programs. We're really trying to focus our work on the needs of our community, Schultz said. The $5 million to $6.5 million alone won't completely pay for these regional centers. One building alone without equipment will cost about $2 million. So though NIAC would pay for the brunt of the project, the college would also need commitments from area school districts and private donations to fully build and equip these centers. Regionalization is going to be the key to quality moving forward, Schultz said. Currently, the college already has an architect working on a floor plan for a center, according to Schultz. At most, three of the regional centers will be built across the college's region, and the first one will most likely open in the Forest City area due to some private funding the college has received from the area, Schultz said. Forest City Community School District Superintendent Darwin Lehman said the regional centers, in addition to the district's partnership with Waldorf University, provide students with another opportunity to see what direction they may want to go in after they graduate. The regional centers will also help districts in dealing with a teacher shortage in the career technical educational areas, Lehman said. As the area schools get closer to having some plans to share with regional businesses, Lehman said, the school district looks forward to creating those partnerships that will provide students the ability for some work-based learning opportunities. The initiative is important to the students in the North Iowa region and can provide them with some great career opportunities, he said. Schultz said the college is doing some pre-planning for these regional centers, and the first one is expected to open fall of 2021. The location of these centers need to be based on geography and where all the high schools are, keeping in mind neutrality from all school districts and transportation of students between the center and their schools. If we get our high school partners to agree and our local industry to agree on these programs, then we have to recruit students and get instructors, he said. The regional centers will include some high school programming, and high school students could come to the centers and take some courses for a morning or an afternoon. These classes will help prepare students for college courses and would usually have low enrollment numbers in individual high schools, making it more cost efficient for several high schools to bring their students together to take the same classes and fulfill high school graduation requirements. The regional centers would also be available to the general public and college students as well. Jack?
Family's Rough Road May Be Ending by Jared McNett, a reporter. When Sioux City residents Chelsea and Troy Delling appeared before their five-member city council in late November 2019, they had a singular request for the body and Mayor Wendy Zilski. They wanted the road in front of their family home fixed so that it would be more easily accessible for their son. A month later, they made some progress on the matter at a December council meeting. Before the year is up, they hope they'll at least have some needed repairs. Corbin Delling, 8, has to use a wheelchair to go to school and get out and about with his parents because he has mobility issues. The Dellings have said that these issues are compounded by the road their house is on because it's prone to frost boils, which cause uneven terrain and drainage problems. In 2018, local workers had to lay several loads of new gravel out on the road. The family has had to take Corbin to the hospital numerous times for a variety of medical issues and worry about such problems slowing them down when time is of the essence. By their own count, There was a six-week stretch the previous winter when neither Corbin nor a school bus could use the road at all. At least once, one of his grandparents, Deb Govern, had to carry him down that road to as close to the school bus could get to the Dellings house. What could be done? When the Dellings appeared at that November 20th meeting, Chelsea asked as quickly as she could, "Where are we with the road?" Part of Zielski's response was that the city, which has a population floating just above 500, doesn't have a legal obligation to maintain the road the Dellings live on in a way that's any different from any other road in Sioux City. After the meeting, she added to that point to offer more context. It's a matter of, does the road require maintenance? Zielski asked. It doesn't. None of the council is heartless. It has been played like that. Another point Zielski made sure to make was that the street is on a FEMA listing from a series of springtime storms that tore through the area and did some form of damage to most of Sioux City's roads. With FEMA money, we can't upgrade, but we can repair, she said. What will be done? Now, before the year is up, it's likely that the road in front of the Dellings house will be repaired. A motion at the December Sioux City Council meeting carried 5-0 that street would be addressed along with all of the streets in town with filed FEMA damage. According to Zielski, workers hope to have repairs made by early spring when the roads are feasible to do work on. She said the city will have to pay about 15% of the total, but isn't sure yet what that final number will be. We're still waiting on a final quote from them. There's a lot of moving parts in that process. It's a huge hug. It's huge in a small town like this to do some street repair that's been beneficial to the citizens, Zielke said. Chelsea Delling is happy that the road will get repaired at some point this spring, but a mix of confusion and frustration still lingers for her. They said that they are going to fix our road through the grant money they are going to receive, but they did say that our road is not a top priority, she said. It's getting done, but it's getting done after all the other roads, which I think is completely wrong. That totally puts aside why we're doing this. We're raising this thing about Corbin's health and safety, and they're worrying about the roads. She did credit more recent conditions on the road for not further exacerbating her son's accessibility issues. According to Delling, the city has been decent about snow removal, and roads have been cleared in a timely manner. One thing Delling is even more thankful about, Corbin hasn't been in the hospital this winter so far. She said he's missed time from school in part because of issues stemming from his long-term chronic lung issues, but the family is managing. It really isn't affecting him, but it affects us as parents, Delling said. Reach reporter Jerry McNett, follow him on Twitter and Instagram at TwoHeadedBoy98. Karen.
Who's in Truth's case part of TV series? Up and Vanished to premiere Saturday on Oxygen. A true crime podcast turned TV series will feature the unsolved Jody Who's in Truth case when it returns this weekend. Up and Vanished, based on the investigative podcast of the same name, will premiere at 6 p.m. on Saturday on Oxygen. The two-hour season premiere will explore the June 27, 1995 disappearance of Jody, the then 27-year-old KIMT news anchor, from her Mason City apartment. Since then, her family and friends have been searching for her and are tormented with numerous theories of her demise. Who's in Truth is one of five cases of missing individuals. Payne Lindsay, an Atlanta director and independent filmmaker, and his team of investigative podcast focus on as they search for answers to help the victims' families gain a sense of closure. Each episode of Up and Vanished will feature a different case of a missing person. Who's in Truth's will air first. New witnesses will be interviewed, and persons of interest will be confronted as Lindsay and his team stop at nothing to find the truth and try to unravel the mysterious disappearance. Huizentrout, a morning news anchor, disappeared June 27, 1995 in Mason City. Investigators have never found her body. She told a colleague she was on her way to work early that morning, but never arrived. Police found signs of a struggle outside her Mason City apartment. Huizentrout was declared legally dead in 2001, and no one has been charged in her disappearance. In 2004, police checked the basement of a home formerly occupied by John Van Sintz, but said the search yielded no new information. Van Sintz, who now lives in Arizona, was an acquaintance of Huizentrout and is believed to be one of the last people to see her alive. He videotaped a birthday party he threw for Huizentrout just days before her disappearance. Van Sintz said she was at his house the night before her disappearance watching the tape. In March 2017, the Mason City Police Department executed a search warrant against Van Sintz. He is named on the search warrant for GPS data from a 1999 Honda Civic and a 2013 GMC 1500. The warrant was sealed the same day, meaning no other information was publicly available about why the search was ordered or what was discovered. In October 2017, a judge ordered the documents would remain sealed for another year. The seal has been extended twice, and the warrant will remain sealed until September 2020. Cerro Gordo County Attorney Carlisle Dallin said an application to extend the seal was done at the request of law enforcement this fall. Law enforcement believed that allowing access to the information contained in the document would jeopardize their investigation, Dallin wrote in an email. I think the last thing anyone wants at this time is to interfere with an ongoing investigation. Mason City Police Chief Jeff Brinkley said he expected the warrant to remain sealed until the investigation and or prosecution were completed. Up and Vanished is produced by Progate Content and Tenderfoot TV. Tenderfoot TV, an Atlanta-based content creation company that is a home for storytellers, was founded by Lindsay and music industry veteran Donald Albright. The company launched in August 2016 with the release of the true crime podcast, Up and Vanished, which led to an arrest in the decade-old missing persons case of missing schoolteacher and beauty queen Tara Grinstead. The podcast, hosted by Lindsay, was instrumental in cracking Grinstead's case, leading to two arrests in early 2017. Up and Vanished launched a second season of the podcast in the fall of 2018, covering the case of missing young mother Crystal Ann Reinsinger. Because of the podcast, the Colorado Bureau of Investigation is now actively investigating Crystal's case. Anyone with information about Huizentrout's disappearance is asked to contact Mason City Police Lieutenant Rich Jensen at 421-3636.
Okay. United Way raises $769,000 during 2019 campaign by Jarrett McNett of the Globe Gazette. In 2018, the United Way of North Central Iowa took in $726,000 for its fundraising campaign, which officials said they used to fund more than 40 programs and impact the lives of more than 15,000 residents in the area. For 2019, these fundraising and impact numbers were both up. According to a press release from the United Way of North Central Iowa, the organization raised $769,000 while assisting some 27,264 North Iowa area residents on issues such as education, health, and income. This year was an amazing show of the kind of generosity that North Iowa is known for, United Way of North Central Iowa CEO Jen Ahrens said in a statement. The kindness and love that was shown by our donors, volunteers, and team members truly changes lives every day, right here where we live. As part of the United Way chapter's work, funds that are raised stay within the 8 counties it serves, which includes counties such as Cerro Gordo, Floyd, and Kossuth. The funds raised will be allocated within the next month. Local partner agencies for the United Way of North Central Iowa include Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Francis Lauer Youth Services, and Iowa Legal Aid. Karen?
Thank you, Jack. Clear Lake crash sends 3 to hospital. 3 North Iowa residents were sent to the hospital with injuries after a coach bus struck a car in Clear Lake on Wednesday. Murfield Laverne Torkelson, 69, of Mason City, was driving a 2019 Forest River bus east on 27th Avenue South when he failed to obey a stop sign in the intersection of South 8th Street, striking the side of a 2014 Ford Focus driven by Brandy Jane Pals, 19, of Clear Lake. Torkelson Pals and a third person, Shana Elise Brunsvold, 32, of Clear Lake, were transported to Mercy, North Iowa, in Mason City with injuries. Pals was later moved to Mayo Clinic in Rochester. Iowa State Patrol, Clear Lake Police Department, Mason City Fire and Ambulance, and Cerro Gordo County Sheriff's Office all responded to the scene. Jack?
The next article is Governor Reynolds takes tax swap plan on road. Iowa sales tax would rise while other taxes decrease. By Rob Bossart, special to the Globe Gazette. Governor Kim Reynolds is taking her top legislative priority on the road in hopes of convincing Iowans of her plan to fund water quality projects, mental health care, and other needs by increasing the sales tax, but also providing income tax and property tax relief. The GOP governor, surrounded Wednesday by 26 supporters from a wide range of Iowa organizations at her weekly news conference, says she plans a series of meetings around Iowa to discuss her plan. It entails raising the sales tax by 1 cent to fund water quality, conservation, and outdoor recreation programs, while reducing income tax rates and brackets, and establishing a new state funding mechanism for mental health services now paid for with property taxes. I'm going to go out there and drive this, Reynolds said, before embarking on her first stops in Oskaloosa and Ottumwa. She said she hoped to get Iowans' feedback on where we hit the mark or where they might have suggestions. The Invest in Iowa Act is a bold vision for Iowa that lowers the overall tax burden on Iowans and invests significantly in mental health and water quality. This plan will have immediate results for our economic competitiveness and overall quality of life, the governor said. The measure Reynolds outlined last month in her condition of the state address and proposed in bill form this week builds on a 2010 vote by Iowans to approve a constitutional amendment dedicating the first 3/8 of a cent of the next sales tax increase to a number of environmental and natural resources initiatives. We have no interest in raising taxes, Reynolds said, and I heard that as we were traveling the state. And so we sat down and looked at a lot of different opportunities to not only fund priorities that are important to us, but to have it be an overall tax cut. Reynolds said Wednesday that $172 million of the proposed $540 million raised by a 1 cent sales tax increase would go toward water quality, conservation, and outdoor recreation programs. However, she said she expected the distribution formula for the trust fund proceeds to be modified to reflect conditions that have changed since 2010. Iowa Agriculture Secretary Mike Naig said Iowa has been making progress on improving water quality through an increased emphasis on buffer strips, cover crops, and other voluntary conservation measures. The governor's plan would completely change the trajectory we're on today by providing a new reliable funding stream. Representative John Wills, a Spirit Lake Republican who is the third highest leader in the Iowa House, said Reynolds has offered a bold plan but indicated it may not stay intact as it works its way through the legislature. We're really trying to digest the bill itself, understanding what's all in it and that sort of thing, Wells said. And so we really haven't had a chance to discuss it in depth. Some legislators have expressed concern that proceeds from the sales tax increase would be used to supplant existing state revenue without necessarily increasing the overall commitment and would adversely impact elderly and poorer Iowans who would not benefit from income tax cuts but would pay more with a higher sales tax. The governor's office has not released a schedule of stops for Reynolds community meetings. Karen?
House panel passes abortion resolution. It appears the Iowa Senate on Thursday will debate a proposed constitutional amendment to specify there is no fundamental right in the Iowa Constitution to abortion or public funding for the procedure. Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitaker, a Republican of Ankeny, said that's a definite possibility after the family leader tweeted the Senate Joint Resolution 21 would be debated Thursday morning. The House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday approved the resolution, House Study Bill 577, on an 11-9 party line vote that sends the bill to the full House for debate. Supporters on the House committee said the legislation is needed to correct a 2018 judicial overreach by the Iowa Supreme Court that usurped legislative authority by essentially creating a right that did not exist before the court's 5-2 ruling to strike down limits on abortion. The resolution calls for an amendment prescribing language that eventually could come before Iowa voters to declare the Iowa Constitution shall not be construed to recognize, grant, or secure a right to abortion or to require the public funding of abortion. Don't be fooled, Representative Karen Deary, a Democrat from Johnston, told the House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday. Proponents of this amendment would have you believe that this is simply about making the Iowa Constitution silent or neutral on abortion, that this amendment to the Iowa Constitution is needed in order to prevent late-term and taxpayer-funded abortions, that it's about addressing judicial overreach.
Okay, next article, Iowa Considers Criminalizing Creepy Relationships, by James Lynch, special to the Globe Gazette. Creepy or criminal? A House subcommittee wrestled briefly with that question Wednesday when considering a bill motivated by a 40-year-old flight instructor's sexual relationship with his 16-year-old student. I think it's creepy, Representative Bobby Kaufman of Wilton said. Kaufman was running the bill at the request of a Scott County family that was frustrated the instructor could not be prosecuted under current law. According to the family, the instructor waited until the girl, who began flight lessons at 15, reached the Iowa age of legal consent to initiate the sexual relationships. There are lots of creepy things that aren't crimes, Representative Mary Wolf, Democrat of Clinton, said. It's our responsibility to determine where creepy crosses the line, Kaufman said. Kaufman, Wolf, and Representative Brian Lowe's, Republican of Bondurant, who said that if a 22-year-old starts dating his soon-to-be 16-year-old daughter, my shotgun will be out, agreed the bill needs significant work, but sent it to the full Judiciary Committee. A companion bill, Senate File 584, was approved by a Senate subcommittee in 2019. As written, House File 2248 is not consistent with Iowa code regarding other sex crimes, Wolf said. Under the bill, a person who engages in sexual activity with a person who is 16 or 17 years of age would be guilty of an aggravated misdemeanor if they are not cohabiting with the consent of the teen's parents, and the person is 27 years of age or older. In other cases, there are special sentences as well as a requirement that the offender be listed on the sex offender registry. If the legislator adopts this proposal, Wolf said, It should be consistent with existing law. If you want to warn other people about them, put them on the sex offender registry, Wolf said. There may be a better basis for determining whether a sexual relationship should be criminal, Wolf said. Rather than using the age of consent or the difference in age between the perpetrator and the victim, she suggested considering the fiduciary responsibility of an adult in a relationship with a minor. That could be applied to teachers, coaches, and other adults in relationships with minors if they become sexual. Lobbyists representing prosecutors, the Bar Association, and civil rights groups questioned the inconsistencies between the proposal and existing state law, including using 27 as the jumping-off point. ACLU Iowa, which is undecided on the bill, pointed out that age differences between participants in sexual relationships may differ in some cultures, including the LGBTQ community. We could do some work on it, Lowe said, before the committee moved to the full committee with an agreement to work on an amendment. Karen?
Our obituary today is for Tayana Knutson. Tayana Knutson, 21, of Manly, gained her wings as an angel on Monday, February 10, 2020, at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center with her family at her side. And yet, her story will continue. On Thursday, February 13, 2020, Tayana gave the gift of life to four recipients through organ donation. The family will greet guests from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. in a celebration of Tayana's life on Sunday, February 16, 2020, at Bethlehem Lutheran Church, 428 West Walnut Street in Manly, Iowa. A funeral service will follow the visitation at 4 p.m. with Pastor Linda Johnson Prestholt officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the family to be gifted in Tayana's memory. In honor of Tayana, the family suggests casual clothing be worn, preferably of your favorite sports team. Connor Colonial Chapel in Northwood is in charge of arrangements.
Okay, here's another article. Bills would protect drivers from ice missiles. There's a picture of an ice missile about the size of a shoebox, which flew through Bill Taylor's pickup truck in New Hampshire last year, causing a gash on his forehead. Washington. Bill Taylor was driving home from work in New Hampshire last January when a chunk of ice the size of a shoebox broke off the top of a storage container hauled by a truck ahead of him, crashed through his windshield, and hit him squarely in the forehead. A Good Samaritan stopped and called 911. An ambulance took Taylor to the emergency room. He had a 3-inch gash on his forehead and broken glasses embedded in his hands and face. He received about a dozen stitches. It could have been worse, said Taylor, 42, a road and bridge construction inspector for the New Hampshire Department of Transportation. I could have died if it had hit me in the neck and throat. Taylor was the victim of an ice missile incident in which sheets or blocks of snow and ice fly off roofs or windshields of cars and trucks, endangering those in vehicles behind them. Ice missiles can distract drivers and cause them to swerve into other cars, and they can crack windshields and sometimes cause injuries, even deaths. They don't call them missiles for nothing. They create significant hazards, said Maureen Vogel, spokesman for the National Safety Council, an Itasca, Illinois-based organization founded on eliminating preventable deaths. Even if they don't result in an injury, it's terrifying, especially if you're going down the highway at 65 miles an hour and you see something flying towards your windshield. Police and safety officials encourage drivers to keep their vehicles' roofs and windshields clear of snow and ice, but not everyone takes heed. A year ago, for example, state troopers in Connecticut warned of an alarmingly high number of missiles flying off vehicles after a late January snow and ice storm. In many states, it's not illegal to leave the snow there, although some legislators are trying to change that. Many in the trucking industry oppose the efforts, worrying about the dangers of requiring operators to remove snow and ice from the tops of very large rigs. It's very difficult to get on top of the trailer and remove that snow and ice, said Abigail Potter, a safety policy manager at an American Trucking Associations, a trade group. It can result in workplace injuries. At least four states, Delaware, New York, Pennsylvania, and Vermont, have bills pending that would require drivers to clear off excessive ice and snow and would impose fines for violators, said Samantha Block, a policy associate at the National Conference of State Legislators. Some states allow police to ticket motorists if their vehicle is considered a danger or the driver can't see through an icy or snowy windshield, Block said. But only a handful have laws specific to ice missiles. Connecticut motorists can be fined $120 if they don't remove accumulated snow or ice. If a missile causes personal injury or property damage, the penalty is $200 to $1,000 for non-commercial drivers and $500 to $1,250 for commercial drivers. Last year, Connecticut State Police issued 372 citations to non-commercial drivers and nearly 150 to commercial drivers, according to spokesman Trooper Josu Dorelus. It's a huge concern for us, Dorelus said. We know that whatever chunks of snow or ice go flying from vehicles traveling at 55, 65, or even 75 miles an hour, it becomes a hazard for our motorists. New Jersey has a similar statute. Pennsylvania's ice missile law applies only if snow or ice strikes a car or person and causes serious injury or death. Federal officials don't keep data on crashes, injuries, or deaths caused by ice missiles, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. But police and transportation safety advocates say that the incidents are not uncommon in northern states and those that get heavy snow and sleet. Among such incidents, four people were injured in Massachusetts in January when ice dislodged from a truck smashed through the windshield of a pickup. A Minnesota woman suffered facial and head injuries after a huge piece of ice flew off a pickup truck and trailer in December and shattered her windshield. In the past few years, several states, including Maryland, Massachusetts, and Virginia, have considered bills requiring motorists to clear off ice and snow and allowing police to ticket those who don't. None has passed. In Pennsylvania, Democratic State Senator Lisa Boscala has spent years trying to expand the current law to require drivers to clear snow accumulated and establish fines for violators, even when no one gets injured. Karen?
Annual Trumpeter Swan Soiree takes flight in Des Moines this Saturday. The public is invited to attend the annual Trumpeter Swan Soiree to celebrate North America's waterfowl species at Walnut Woods State Park on Saturday, February 15th, from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Saturday's program will be given indoors and outdoors at the Walnut Woods State Park Lodge, with concurrent outdoor viewing and interpretive presentations of trumpeter swans and wildlife given by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, Des Moines Parks and Recreation, and a Kansas City Zoo naturalist. Spotting scopes and binoculars will be provided. An estimated 120 trumpeter swans are wintering at the Dale Moffett Reservoir and surrounding area at the Dale Moffett Reservoir and surrounding southwest of Des Moines, providing a rare opportunity to view good numbers of free-flying trumpeter swans that wouldn't have even been possible a little over a century ago. They were extirpated from the state in the 1880s and were only brought back to Iowa through restoration efforts started in the 1990s. Hot chocolate, hot cider, cookies, hot dogs, and other snacks will be available. This event is being sponsored by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, Polk and Dallas County Conservation Boards, Des Moines Parks and Recreation, Walnut Woods State Park, Kansas City Zoo, and the Trumpeter Swan Society. Jack?
And here are events from Today in History. Today is Friday, February 24th, the 45th day of 2020. There are 321 days left in the year. This is Valentine's Day. Today's highlight in history. On February 14, 2018, a gunman identified as a former student opened fire with a semi-automatic rifle at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School near Fort Lauderdale, Florida, killing 17 people in the nation's deadliest school shooting since the attack in Newtown, Connecticut, more than 5 years earlier. On this date, in 1859, Oregon was admitted to the Union as the 33rd state. In 1876, inventors Alexander Graham Bell and Elisha Gray applied separately for patents related to the telephone. The U.S. Supreme Court eventually ruled Bell the rightful inventor. In 1912, Arizona became the 48th state of the Union as President William Howard Taft signed a proclamation. In 1913, labor leader Jimmy Hoffa was born in Brazil, Indiana. College football coach Woody Hayes was born in Clifton, Ohio. Sports broadcaster Mel Allen was born in Birmingham, Alabama. In 1929, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre took place in a Chicago garage as seven rivals of Al Capone's gang were gunned down. In 1945, during World War II, British and Canadian forces reached the Rhine River in Germany. In 1949, Israel's Knesset convened for the first time. In 1967, Aretha Franklin recorded her cover of Otis Redding's Respect at Atlantic Records in New York. In 1979, Adolf Dubs, the United States ambassador to Afghanistan, was kidnapped in Kabul by Muslim extremists and killed in a shootout between his abductors and police. In 1984, six-year-old Stormy Jones became the world's first heart-liver transplant recipient when the surgery was performed at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. She lived until November 1990. In 1985, cable news network reporter Jeremy Levin, held hostage by extremists in Lebanon, escaped from his captors. In 2013, double amputee and Olympic sprinter Oscar Pistorius shot and killed his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp, at his home in Pretoria, South Africa. He was later convicted of murder and is serving a 13-year prison term. American Airlines and U.S. Airways announced an $11 billion merger that turned American into the world's largest airline 10 years ago. The Americans broke through the Nordic combined barrier at Vancouver as Johnny Spillane won the silver, the first U.S. Olympic medal in the sport dominated since its inception by the Europeans. Jason Lamy-Chapuis of France won the gold. Jamie McNeary won the Daytona 500. The Eastern Conference edged the West 141-139 in the NBA All-Star Game in Arlington, Texas. Larry Ellison's space-age Trimaran completed a two-race swap in the 33rd America's Cup. Death claimed best-selling British author Dick Francis at age 89, and Doug Figer, leader of the power pop band The Knack, at age 87. 5 years ago, a Danish gunman attacked a free speech seminar in a synagogue in Copenhagen, killing two people. The shooter was later slain by special police team. Karen?
In our sports today, the headline is Lloyd's impact felt throughout North Iowa. Mason City hockey coach John Lloyd gives pointers to senior A.J. Corsello prior to practice February 6th at the Mason City All-Purpose Arena in downtown Mason City. And that's the caption for our photo. Since 1983, Mohawk Hockey Club coach has been on the ice. When John Lloyd arrived in North Iowa in 1983, he brought with him an immense passion for hockey. Growing up, Lloyd was constantly playing. Much of the time, he played on outdoor rinks, on boot, or unorganized hockey teams, moving up to men's league when he lived in Alaska. In 1967, when Lloyd was working as an air traffic controller in Fairbanks, He walked down half a block from his home to an outdoor rink to watch a game. While having a conversation with a man who was coaching director, Lloyd was asked to coach a bantam team consisting of 7th and 8th graders, as there was a shortage of coaches at the time. Apprehensive at first, the idea clearly grew on him once he accepted the job and led his team to a first-place finish, a modest origin for a 53-year-old coaching career. After transferring to the Minneapolis Air Traffic Control in Farmington, Lloyd continued to coach youth hockey and was an assistant coach for a high school team. In 1983, the inaugural year of the North Iowa Ice Arena in Mason City, Lloyd accepted a job as arena manager and promptly began coaching the high school club, Mohawk Hockey, which this year pulls talent from 6 North Iowa high schools. Since then, Lloyd has made North Iowa a haven for youth hockey. He's been a big part of hockey throughout North Iowa, said assistant coach and former player Ethan McHenry. He's made an impact, and pretty much everyone knows who he is when you say his name. McHenry, who has played for Lloyd for over 10 years, including 4 years on the Mohawk Club, couldn't seem to stay away after graduating in 2016. He has helped the team with player development for the past 2 seasons. He's got that knowledge and experience of all the years he's coached, and he knows what works, what doesn't work, he said. If he's going to tell you to do something, he's got facts to back himself up. As an ambassador for a sport for such a long time, things are bound to change over time. The one thing that hasn't changed for Lloyd is enjoying watching his players grow. I like to go watch our little mites, he said. You get to know them as they come up, and sometimes you see a couple of kids that are just really good. But as they get older, they're still good. But the rest of them catch up, so it makes for good competition by the time they get to high school. Sitting in his new office at the Mason City Multipurpose Arena, Lloyd had trouble picking a favorite memory or team from throughout his career, indicating a career full of good memories to choose from. I can remember things about all the teams. Sometimes it's certain players, he said. There's quite a few games that I remember that I think about often because they're just fun games. Sometimes we lost, sometimes we won, but they were just good competition. At the end of the day, it's what his players take with them after they leave the ice that is most important to Lloyd. I've watched the work ethic in some of our players, and then after they get out in the real world, that work ethic is still there, he said. That's gratifying to see. Jack?
Now, to game day, your guide to week 13 in high school basketball. The headline is Crook's Breakout as Bishop Garrigan on Edge of Postseason Glory. And there's a picture here of West Hancock's Kennedy Kelly looks to go inside against Bishop Garrigan's Audie Crooks in the Golden Bears' 55-54 win on February 7th in Brett. Shane Lance is the reporter. When teams go up against Bishop Garrigan freshman Audie Crooks, they are oftentimes helpless to stop her. At 6'3", Crooks presents a big challenge down near the boards. On offense, she is a force near the basket, shooting nearly 71% from the field. When she gets it and misses, we're kind of surprised she misses, head coach Brandon Schwab said. She's had a lot of nights where she is 11 of 11 or 12 for 12 from the field. Crooks comes from a basketball family. Her mother, Michelle Cook, formerly Vitstham, is on the all-time record board at Bishop Garrigan, and the team has anticipated Crook's arrival for a while. We've known Audie is coming up for a long time, Schwab said. Obviously, since her 7th and 8th grade year, she took her game to another level by traveling around the state and country playing a lot of games. She's gotten a ton better in the past 2 years. In her first varsity season, Crooks has compiled 494 points, 7th best in the state. She has collected 246 rebounds and 72 blocks, ninth and sixth most in the state, respectively. Though she is a freshman, Crooks is already attracting attention from big-time college programs. But with three full seasons left before she graduates high school, Crooks has plenty of time to decide on her future. UNI has been at our practice. Iowa State is going to be here tonight, Schwab said, before the game against West Hancock. Iowa sent a couple letters to her. Every Division I school in the state has contacted her. Being a freshman, it's pretty fresh, and she's got a lot of time before this has to be worried about. Karen?
Our players to watch. Audie Crooks, Bishop Garrigan. After 35 points last week against undefeated West Hancock, Crooks put the state on notice. With Division I colleges already expressing interest, the freshman is going to be a force for years to come in North Iowa. Jonna Bloom in Osage. With a 51% shooting percentage and a 20.4 points per average game, Bloom is among the area's most dangerous shooters. I expect Osage to make a deep run in the regional tournament, and Bloom will be one of the big reasons why. If he keeps draining threes, the Red Devil will be hard to stop.
Okay.
That brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, February 14th, 2020. Your readers have been Karen and Jack. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You are listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.